Hello everyone and welcome to the Smash Business Show. Today is Tuesday, May 6, 2025. I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
And I'm Warit Ahmed, and we have a great show for you today. Now, today we're going to be discussing how, firstly, Trump's golf itinerary has finally been revealed. He's going to be in Riyadh on May 13th, Doha and Qatar on May 14th, and Abu Dhabi on May 15th in the UAE. Secondly, we're also going to discuss how Shark Tank Dubai Season 3 has launched with some star investors and new bold entrepreneurs that are going to be included. We're also going to be discussing how Cairo's Money Fellows has raised $13 million to expand its digital savings circles beyond Egypt. And finally, STV launches a $100 million fund to support Saudi tech startups. And Egypt's Rabbit launches in Saudi Arabia, backed by regional investors.
First thing first, the biggest story of the day, Trump's Gulf itinerary has been revealed. U.S. President Donald Trump will begin his Middle East tour in Riyadh on May 13, then visit Doha on May 14, and conclude in Abu Dhabi on May 15. That's according to a report from Axios. The timing of the trip is notable. It coincides with high-level economic and defense announcements.
Now, in Riyadh, Trump is expected to attend the Saudi-U.S. Investment Forum, an invite-only gathering where multi-trillion dollar deals will be discussed. Sectors in focus include energy, minerals, artificial intelligence, healthcare, and advancement. Manufacturing. Now, the forum is a part of a wider efforts to deepen economic cooperation between Washington and the Gulf.
And the visit also aligns with the proposed $100 billion arms deal between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia, one of the largest in American history. This was reported by Reuters. Saudi Arabia has already pledged $600 billion in investment into the United States over the next 4 years. Meanwhile, the UAE plans to invest $1.4 trillion in the U.S. over the next decade.
Now, the Gulf tour also interestingly comes just after a major real estate announcement in Qatar. Now, Qatari DR and Dubai-based Star Global have unveiled plans for a $3 billion Trump International Golf Club and Villas project in Siasma, 40 kilometers north of Doha. Now, the development includes resorts, an 18-hole golf course, a marina, and a retail space.
Qatari Diyar will manage the project. It follows Dar Global's earlier launch of the Trump International Hotel and Tower in Dubai, said to be one of the city's tallest at 350 meters. It marks the fifth collaboration between Dar Global and the Trump Organization.
Now, I think what's interesting here is the fact that he's visiting Saudi first. I think, because if you take a look at it, he's visiting Saudi first in May 13th. May 14th is Qatar, and May 15th is the UAE. He has already signed a $1.4 trillion deal with the UAE, which they're going to be investing over the next decade. So I think for him, the main focus is I need to make sure that I walk out with that $1 trillion that I asked for in Davos when I reach Saudi.
He's coming here for money. He will get money because it is the capital of the region right now. The whole world's capital is like concentrated right now in the Middle East. Saudi, UAE, Qatar, Kuwait, to an extent, Bahrain, Oman. Everyone is doing good. And that takes us to our second story of the day. Shark Tank Dubai is officially back for season 3. The hit entrepreneur reality show returns to Dubai TV with a fresh lineup of high-stakes pitches, ambitious founders, and heavyweight investors. This season will feature over 77 entrepreneurs from across the UAE and beyond competing for investment from a panel of global business leaders.
Now, backed by the Dubai Economic Agenda D33, the show continues to serve as a platform for driving innovation and attracting foreign investment. Now, in season 2 alone, more than 31 million dirhams were invested across 27 ventures, highlighting the real-world business impact of the program.
Season's three core panel of investors include some of the region's most influential names and the usual suspects, Eli Khoury, Faisal Behloul, and Amira Sajwani. Eli Khoury runs Vivium. Faisal Behloul has a conglomerate of different businesses. Amira Sajwani is the MD of Dimag Properties. Together, they bring deep expertise across industries like marketing, healthcare, and real estate, and and are on the lookout for the next breakthrough idea.
Now, the show will also feature a rotating roster of guest sharks, among them beauty mogul Mona Khatan, venture capitalist Noor Suwaid, retail leader Adil Sajjan, and entrepreneur Mona Ataya, and U.S.-based investor Matt Higgins. Now, their participation is definitely going to bring a mix of local insight and international capital to the table.
And Shark Tank Dubai airs every Monday on Dubai TV with a repeat broadcast on Sundays via Dubai One. The series continues to reflect Dubai's ambition to position itself as a global innovation and investment hub. Even the second season, I remember we did a story on the guest judges, because those are like the main ones, because the main three core judges have stayed same throughout the three seasons. But I have realized over the years that Dubai Shark Tank, the Shark Tank Dubai, doesn't stand up to what actually the Shark Tank is. There is some kind of spark that they're missing. And I've realized that after watching the second season, some parts, I think it's because mainly they do it in Arabic, so it's only for the Arabic world. Mm. But they, if they can do a dubbing version where they can dub everything in English.
I think it has to do with distribution, Majid.
Because
I watched it, and especially with Amira Sejwani,
yeah.
Oh man, she's so empowering. The way that she's speaking, it's really entertaining. I think it's the fact that I think it was streaming on OSN. It's the fact that it's not on places like Netflix.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like these are the streaming services that people are using, and that's
most
where people
are
watching things like Dubai Bling.
So if you don't have a subscription, you can't watch it. But there's this good thing that people take clips and put it on social media so you can see the main highlights. The only problem for me is the English dubbing. I think they should have, because it's very, sometimes it's very weird that Adil Sajjan from Danube, he never speaks Arabic, he doesn't know Arabic. But in the show, all the judges are talking in Arabic and then Adil Sajjan starts speaking in English. So I think they need to find a sweet spot where the language barrier or what identity they want to carry.
Yeah,
if they want to carry
sense.
The English identity, the Arabic identity, even Adil Sajjan's part should be at least dubbed in Arabic. So his part should be dubbed. So it becomes quite
even
complicated and confusing for a person like me who wants to watch it, because it starts in Arabic and I'm like, okay, where's the subtitles? And then as soon as I go forward, sometimes I'm like, okay, I understand this guy is saying this. But then I again go to the subtitles. So visually, it's not that appealing also, because I have to go from subtitles to listening to the person to subtitles. So they're trying. It's just the season three. Soon enough, I think they will bring it into something better, or maybe use dubbing. And talking about startups and entrepreneurs and all those, Money Fellows, the Cairo-based fintech digitizing traditional savings group, has raised $13 million in a pre-series C round. The round was led by Morocco's Almada Ventures and Include Fund, with participation from Partech Africa and Commerce Ventures. This brings the startup's total funding to over $60 million.
Now, unlike most digital lenders in Africa, Money Fellows has scaled with almost no debt. Now, it operates a modern version of ROSCAs, Rotating Savings and Credit Associations, connecting users in trusted financial circles. Now, the app allows users to either borrow early or save toward a payout using behavioral and credit data for matching.
And CEO Ahmed Wadi says the company has reached profitability in Egypt while lending billions of Egyptian pounds with minimum working capital exposure. Today, only 7-8% of active circles require the company to fund an unfilled slot. This lean model has fueled rapid growth, with user numbers now topping 8.5 million users.
Now, Money Fellows now plans to expand beyond Egypt, starting with Morocco later this year. Now, the country shares strong informal savings traditions in a digitally receptive population. With regulatory approval secured, the fintech aims to replicate its model across North Africa and South Asia.
And the company has already partnered with over 350 organizations and facilitated more than $50 million in investments as it prepares for a larger Series C round, because this was pre-series, so they will go for a Series C round. Money Fellows is also developing new products, including cards, insurance, and remittances, stepping into the territory of Egypt's top digital banks.
I really feel like I need to explain this to you guys, but basically, Money Fellows is doing is, imagine it like this. You know, there's 10 people, and those 10 people, every single one of them is giving $1,000. If it's 10 people, that's $10,000. Every single month, one person out of those 10 people receives that $10,000. Yeah. And that's basically how it works. And I think, you know, Money Fellows, Majid, it's such a beautiful story because it's such a traditional way of borrowing debt. Yeah. You know, in Sudan, in my home country, they call it a khatta. You know, in Jordan, in Egypt, I believe they call it a jam'iyya. But it's also
common in Asia. We call it committee.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's a very common concept. But the good thing is that they've taken it and they've digitized it into an app.
Which is so interesting. And I know you're all asking, like, how exactly does that look like? But basically, you can go on their app and you can pair with a bunch of people. And, you know, I know a lot of people who actually struggle to find their own khata, their own raska, as what they're calling it. But, it gives you... So if you want to join one with 30 people where you each get $30,000 every single month, you can get that. Or if you want to receive $1,000, it really depends. And, you know, even the amounts that you're giving, they'll pair you up with people who agree with you on that. And what's interesting about the app is that it analyzes behavior. So if you're someone who does not pay on time, probably, or, you know, you have a way of... They'll analyze that and they'll pair you with people like that. And I think for me, you know, hearing that Money Fellows has become profitable, that's such great news because they took an ancient traditional practice and they digitalized it. And I think that's why this entire startup, that's why it's going to become so successful.
Yeah, in our countries, like in the Asian region, it was also a very big scam model. Because a lot of neighborhood people who would start this thing, be like, okay, let's come together, 15, 20, 30 people. They would bring together people, and usually they were a very important person in the community. They would bring everyone, and then they would be like, okay, everyone, let's start a committee. And then they'll start a committee, and that person will run away with the money as soon as everyone pays. So this digitizing is good because there is... behavioral checks. So if someone is doing it, obviously you have an overlord who the app, the publishers of the app who are looking at it. And I was reading this part in the script where it says that sometimes there is, if it's a 10 people pool and one person is missing or one person skips out or anything, the company itself adds that part. So it's very interesting that the company is also lending money.
I feel like there's so much goodwill in that, you know, they're not willing to let people feel that effect. And I think that's why it makes this, the entire idea of, I'm just going to call it a khatta because that's what I'm used to. It makes the idea better because I had this aunt, Majid, before the civil war in Sudan began. She was a part of one where they were all giving money. And, you know, they were receiving it. And she chose to be I would never choose that, but she chose to be the last person, a part of the group, to receive the money. So everyone else received it. But guess what happened? The war came. You know, the banks had everyone's gold and money. They didn't have money, and they said, we're really sorry. Like, we can't give you the last of our savings. And she said that I couldn't even be mad at them because I get it. You know, war is war. Yeah. So I think with apps like these, they protect against things like that happening where they can pair you with people who their circumstances can allow them to perpetually give you that money. And you don't have to, you know, suffer the risk.
Nice way of raising loans. I bought my first car through this. So if I needed a $500,000 for the car, and I went into a committee, and in our culture, it's a chit. So they write all the names, and they just pick a chit. So first is first, second is second. So you don't get a say, but you can swap your numbers. So if you're like third and someone is ninth, you can swap your chits. It's not a problem. But they take out chits, so it's all on chance who will get the first and who will get the last. But it's a very nice way of financing if you want to buy something. I wanted to buy a car. If I would have gone to a bank, I would have to pay nearly 10-15% interest on it. So it was better that I collected money this way. So, yeah, interest-free money also. So it's quite Sharia compliant as well. It's a very nice idea, to be honest. Coming out of Egypt, again, we always talk about UAE and Saudi startups, but Egypt is also doing very innovative, very new things. But let's go back to Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia's leading venture capital firm, STV, has launched a new $100 million fund aimed at accelerating the growth of local tech startups. The initiative forms part of a wider strategy to empower Saudi's tech ecosystem and align with the kingdom's Vision 2030 goals.
Now, unlike traditional funding models, this new fund provides capital without taking equity from the founders. Now, backed by SAB Invest's Alternative Financing Fund, the National Technology Development Program, and several prominent family offices, the move is seen as a bold step to nurture innovation while keeping control in the hands of entrepreneurs.
And this fund is part of STV's broader Total Growth platform, which was launched at LEAP 23 conference in Riyadh. The platform began with $150 million in backing and now combines both equity and debt financing to offer startups flexible funding tailored to their growth stage.
Now, a key highlight of the initiative is Tamanni, a Sharia-compliant, non-dilutive loan product. Now, Tanami allows founders to raise capital without giving up ownership, a move expected to attract a broader range of tech entrepreneurs seeking sustainable growth within the region.
And Abdulrahman Tarabzuni, founder and CEO of STV, said the new phase builds on 5 years of backing standout startups in Saudi Arabia. With STV Total Growth, the firm is expanding its impact, combining financial muscle with industry know-how to help tech companies grow regionally and globally.
And I think funds like these, they're so necessary. But, you know, this just brought a topic to my mind, Majid. Like, I want to ask, like, what do you think about this? Lately, I've been reading a lot, and there are a lot of people who are against how, you know, it seems to be that the business world is always championing startups that are actually losing money and have negative balance sheets that are going concern, but they seem to be encouraging them. They seem to be proud of them. And, you know, I have a friend, they work for this company, and this company, it's like a startup, you know, they've had multiple rounds and they've raised money, but the model is failing. It's secretly failing, but the founder is not even aware of it. So with things like, what do you think about that?
My idea is negative flows are very common, to be honest, across the globe. But they're very common in very high-level growth and very high-level startups, which are at Series D, C, or nearly becoming a unicorn. Because whatever they're earning, they're trying to reinvest into new products, new markets, whatever. So negative inflows, it says negative, but it doesn't mean negative in the traditional sense. But if you're a quick new startup, 1 year old, you just raised pre-seed or maybe seed money, I don't think you should have a negative flow of money, because it shows that whatever you're trying to do hasn't gained traction. Customers don't want it, or you haven't tapped the market properly, haven't marketed the product properly. So yeah, there's like 100 problems that I can think of because of negative cash flow. Like, I don't have enough money in the bank and I'm going in debt, I'm going in this. So if you're starting something, the best idea is to always, best thing that you can do is be at break even. You earn 1 million, you spend 1 million. But if you're a very large startup, negative cash flow actually means that you're doing something. Whatever money is coming in, you're trying to build it and make it bigger and better. You're trying to reach the billion mark or whatever mark you want, whatever evaluation you want for your company. So yeah, very two-edged sword. No idea what startups we're talking about here. Is this a new startup? Like 1 year old, 2 year old?
No, it's been around for like 5 to 6 years.
Oh, 5 to 6 years, they've matured. They are a startup. We ourselves, we are 10 years old this August, Augustus Media. We still are call ourselves startup because we have the startup mentality. We still want to grow. We can grow. We have the ability and the potential and the chance to grow. So startups can be startups for like 20 years also. But again, 5 years is a very good time, I think, to show you if your startup will work or not. And if it doesn't work, by that time, I think you should pull out. Not pull out in the sense that, okay, let's wrap it up, but try to minimize the expenses and see, or just sit down on the table and find out the problem. So, yeah, negative cash flow, not a bad thing, but if it's constant, if it's from the start and it's not going towards a good place, I think even if you don't shut down, just sit down and rethink what's happening.
Speaking of startups, Egyptian quick commerce startup Rabbit has officially launched operations in Saudi Arabia, setting up its regional headquarters in Riyadh. Now, the move marks a major milestone in Rabbit's regional expansion strategy and demonstrates growing investor confidence in the company's business model.
Rabbit's entry to the kingdom comes with new funding from prominent regional venture capital firms, including Lorex Capital and Global Ventures. While the exact amount of the investment remains undisclosed, the capital will be used to strengthen the startup's technology, logistics infrastructure, and talent acquisition.
Now, founded in 2021 by Ahmed Yusri, Rabbit made headlines for delivering groceries and everyday essentials in under 20 minutes through neighborhood-based dark stores and proprietary software. Now, the company is bringing the same promise of speed and efficiency to Saudi consumers.
And the Saudi rollout begins in Riyadh, where Rabbit has already activated fulfillment centers designed for high-speed local delivery. The startup has set an ambitious goal of delivering 20 million items across the kingdom's major cities by the year 2026.
Now, co-founder Ahmed Yusri says Rabbit's Saudi team is built with local talent, ensuring the service is customized for Saudi households. Now, we're focused on bringing families their favorite items in just minutes, he said. The company sees Saudi Arabia as a key market in its long-term Middle East growth strategy. Yeah. Now, it's interesting how, you know, they're doing what basically Noon Minutes is doing here in the UAE. It's just Noon Minutes has not expanded yet to Saudi Arabia. So it will be interesting to see. I do think it will expand. Yeah. Definitely an expansion will come there.
50% they're owned by PIF, so obviously they will. Mm. Noon is available there, but yeah, Noon Minutes is not. Noon itself is their food delivery. The main thing is they're going into a very saturated market where there's this Chinese giant, Meituan, and they have their subsidiary Keta there. They have Hunger Station. They have Delivery Hero back. Mm. There's like so many players. There's a UK startup which recently came to... Keta is not UK. Keta is Chinese. It's owned by Meituan, the Chinese. There's a UK-based startup which recently came to UAE, and in their whole thing, they said that they want to go next to Saudi Arabia. The problem with Saudi Arabia right now is there's so many players. The market is so difficult to get in. Mm. I remember we talked about the Keta and Meituan story on the show as well.
They're doing really well in Saudi, and it's by dropping their prices.
It's aggressive marketing. It's all aggressive marketing. If Delivery Hero or Hunger Station or anyone is giving it to them for like 5 dirhams of delivery, they're like, okay, we'll give it to you for 2 dirhams or 2 riyals of delivery in Saudi Arabia. So that's aggressive marketing. But we also talked about that it's not sustainable over long periods. Mm. You will lose money. Mm. You will gain a greater share of the market, but that means you'll lose a lot of money as well, because operations, bikes, petrols, the driver's salaries, this is like just one aspect. There's like hundreds of things. The dark stores that they're talking about, that's a very nice concept, which recently like nearly 8 to 10 years ago came into light, and Noon also uses that. That is why whenever you order from Noon, if it says 13 minutes, that guy will be there in 10 minutes. Because there is supposed to be a dark store. I don't know what the general trend is, but whatever I've read on it, that every 20 kilometers, they have a dark store. So every 20 kilometers, and they're bringing it down rapidly. So dark stores are like stores where you can't go and shop. Mm. It's just a store with all the essentials in fridge and everywhere. So drivers are there. Noon drivers are sitting there. I remember one of them was under my office in Opal Tower in Business Bay. So whenever I used to come down, I would see like 30, 40 Noon drivers sitting there waiting for their order. So it's a very nice concept. But again, everyone has now started doing it. It's not novel. So
it's almost like time is what's going to distinguish them. I remember,
but I don't think time will even do it. Everyone is delivering quick now, because Q-commerce is so common now that everyone is delivering on time and with speed.
You know what's actually really interesting is when you take a look at the results of who's actually doing the best in terms of quick e-commerce here in the UAE. Number one is Talabat. Now, Talabat is actually holding 46% of orders in the UAE with the most massive user base. And then second, after that, you have Deliveroo. They take up about 25% of orders. and 32% of revenue. But what distinguishes Deliveroo from Talabat is that Deliveroo has very high spending customers, and I think it's because of the basket of luxury clients that Deliveroo attracts. Yeah. You have Fixed Chocolate, which only sell with them. So I see that. And then thirdly, right after that, you have Kareem. And the reason for this, and I was extremely surprised, by the way, because I'm mainly a Kareem user. I don't like Talabat. And
anyone likes Talabat at this point.
No, but imagine it takes up 46% of the market. And when you actually take a look at it and you analyze it, the reason is clear. You know, Kareem is not making as much revenue as Talabat is because what does Kareem do? If you go on Kareem, have you noticed 50% off, 30% off for exclusive members? Even if you're not even a member, they always give discounts.
Yeah.
Like that's a scheme that they rely on. Constant discounts.
Yeah.
And over time, you will not make revenue out of that because you're losing money. So,
yeah.
You know, you can't always accommodate in that sense. But with Talabat, they don't have that many discounts. With Deliveroo, I think what drives their revenue is because they sell expensive products. I've noticed that every single, like, new bakeries, expensive bakeries in town, they're on Deliveroo.
Yeah.
So
and they charge a good amount. They're not
it makes
cheap,
sense.
Like, okay, 2 dirhams, 5 dirhams, 7 dirhams. I think the problem with Noon, what I've seen, because I'm a very avid Noon user, and since we're talking about it, the only problem that I see with Noon is some of the restaurants are not there. So sometimes if my wife wants to eat something and she knows a specific restaurant, I look at it, it's not there. It's on Talabat.
Mm.
So I think if you talk about, if you break it down into parts, I think quick commerce still Noon will have a bigger market. But yeah, food delivery, if you talk about specifically food delivery, Talabat has a bigger menu of restaurants you can order from. So I think they win because of that. And that is why I think Noon also, they're spending more money on minutes. They're spending more power on minutes. I remember Rich went to FII8. He sent us a video of the person who's the CEO right now or someone.
Mm.
He was talking about exactly this point that Noon Minutes, as soon as we launched it, it beat the food business in just 6 months. So our revenue in 6 months from Noon Minutes was more than food. So it shows you that there was a small gap in the market, small place in the market, and Noon tapped it. But now Noon, if they want to grow their food business, they will have to beat Talabat, and they need more restaurant listing. And I don't know how they will do it, but they will try to do it.
They definitely will. And that's a wrap for today. Thank you so much for tuning into the Smashy Business Show. Make sure to follow us across all social media channels at Smashy Business. And stay ahead with our daily newsletter. You'll find the subscription link in the description.
This has been a Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. A big shout out to our 1.6 million monthly listeners across all platforms. You make this possible. If you're one of them, we appreciate you. Thank you very much. Take care. See you tomorrow.